Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick up this show on Podomatic, Amazon, Spotify, and about a dozen other platforms for podcasts. And you can learn more about Camp Constitution by visiting our website, campconstitution.net. And if you like what you hear and want to become a sponsor or just make a donation, there's a place to do that. We have a PayPal account. So on our main page, you can do that. And if you have a business or a nonprofit that you would like to list on our sponsors page, you know, any donation, and just give us a link and maybe a picture, and we'll get you started and appreciate your support. Our camp, we run a week-long family camp that's coming up in just about a month and a half, July 17th to the 22nd. We have a family weekend retreat coming up in late September, early October. And we keep busy. We get a lot of events going on. So visit our website and check out our calendar for the various activities in the area, in the region. So another drive for gun control every time there's a tragic shooting. And it seems to be in the last couple of, just the last few days, any shooting anywhere becomes national news, whether it's two people being shot or one person being shot. And sadly, we see a society that is, I wouldn't say collapsing, but is definitely on the wane, where you know, certain things, proprieties and moral order is in certain cities, especially in these big cities like New York and San Francisco and Chicago, due to mainly the very poor leadership. And the poor leadership is elected by the people. It's not like the folks who voted for the mayor of New York, the mayor of Chicago, mayor of San Francisco, mayor of LA. It's not like they didn't know much about them. They didn't know where they stood. So in many respects, they have to blame themselves for the anarchy and chaos that's happening, as not just the mayors, but the prosecutors and attorney generals that set up no bail policy. So these people who commit violent crimes, first they commit misdemeanors and they'll commit felonies, they're let back out, and then they commit murder, capital offenses, which they can't let them out on bail as quickly. And then they want to blame the gun. They want to blame gun manufacturers. They want to blame me because I have an AR and I need to turn my AR in so some poor child murdered by a deranged person in Texas is somehow my fault. Ed Markey, the senator, U.S. senator from Massachusetts, last week was in front of the Smith & Wesson headquarters in Springfield, Massachusetts. By the way, Smith & Wesson is moving to Tennessee, since the state of Massachusetts is very hostile to companies that make manufacture weapons. Now, they have no trouble. When Smith & Wesson was owned by an English company, English concern, not too long ago, and they were only basically selling weapons to governments. So people like Ed Markey, for example, they have no trouble sending billions of dollars worth of weaponry to the Ukraine or Ukraine to arm them. But he doesn't like the idea of free people in this country being armed. And somehow by disarming average law-abiding citizens, it's going to somehow stop the shootings. This 18-year-old man down in Texas, he had access to these, and they're not weapons of war, semi-automatic. I mean, every time you pull a trigger, a bullet comes out. And you have so many magazines with so many rounds. And that's not a weapon of war. In fact, if you want to call a weapon of war, a stick and a rock and a slingshot can be considered a weapon of war. But it's just interesting how the left, this narrative is repeated all over the country within seconds. You know, whoever's sending out these talking points, every single media outlet, every single leftist picks up on it. So Markey's out in front of the Smith & Wesson headquarters, and he's saying, well, the Smith & Wesson ARs were used in this shooting and in that shooting. Well, he could have said that Smith & Wessons, whether they be handguns or ARs, and I own a Smith & Wesson AR version, MP15 it's called. And they, you know, they're good weapons. They're not you can get them for under $1,000. So they're not something that's going to be $2,000 or $3,000. So I think that's what makes them popular. Anyway, you could make the case that Smith & Wessons were used to prevent crimes a whole lot more than they were used to commit crimes. In fact, it's like, for every crime that was used by a Smith & Wesson, that a person used a Smith & Wesson, it may 100 times used to prevent a crime. So these are stats that the left doesn't want you to know about. They don't want you to know about how armed citizens have used weapons to defend their lives and lives of others. And if you were to take all these weapons out of their hands, that the crime rate would go up astronomically. But they don't care. They don't really care about 19 children being killed. They're using it for political gain and political gain only. Children are dying in Chicago and New York, these big cities, every day, every weekend. You hear about 30 shootings, 10 deaths, 5 of them are children. None of them say a word about it. They're happy because they're happening in Democrat-controlled cities that have strict gun control. Let me tell you, I used to live in Massachusetts. I'll tell you how difficult it is to exercise the right to keep and bear arms. At one point, back in the 1980s, the story is I got out of the Army in 1980. I was 21 years of age. I was an expert marksman with an M16, like many of my fellow soldiers, and also M60 machine gun. I was a crew member of that. So I knew my way. I've never fired a handgun, but I was very proficient at that time with a weapon of war, in fact. So I applied for my permit to a gun permit. It was, in those days, it was called an FID card, firearms identification. And as long as you didn't have any felony convictions, or if there was a few other things, you're going to be a drug addict, you had to have a clean record. I think you could have misdemeanor charges, but as long as, and today, when I filled out the gun form, as long as I didn't have any spousal misdemeanor charges, then you could get a firearm. Nope. And I think it took me about 3 or 4 days from filling it out to actually go. And I picked up in person and I took that FID card, and I may have even walked from the headquarters that at that time was in what was known as the Back Bay of Boston. And I walked, I think, to the old Woolworths, the 5 and 10 store in downtown Boston. Now it's known as Boston Crossing. And I went up on the escalator to the second floor, showed them my FID card, and I bought a Ruger 22 rifle and a couple hundred rounds. And nobody buys 10 rounds. I mean, it's, oh, he had hundreds of rounds of ammunition. Well, most people, when they buy ammo, they might buy 1,000 rounds. The Ruger had a little magazine that you stick right into it. It was 10 round magazine, and you just stick it right in there. And, that was that. I went on this, took the weapon in a bag, of course, with the rounds on the subway and in a bus, and went home. It was in Boston in the 70s, in the early 80s, there was the murder rate wasn't the best in the country. It was a little high. There was some number of murders. Most of them would be gang related. They definitely weren't people like me who bought the weapon not only for target practice, but for also protection. And I still have that 22. It's never killed anybody. It shot a lot of beer cans, a lot of targets, but it's never. In fact, I never really used it that much. I didn't have a lot of opportunities living in Boston to fire it, but on occasions I would go to a range. But rare occasions, but I had it, and it was something that was there when I needed it. And thankfully, the only time I needed it was I had moved out of the parents' house a year after I got out of the Army, and I lived about less than a mile away. And I got a call from my younger sister, Debbie, about 2 o'clock in the morning. And she said, someone's trying to break into the bulkhead in the back. So I said, call 911 and I'll be right there. And I got there within a few minutes, had my rifle, went to the back. Nobody was there. So the person got scared off, couldn't get in and ran. And the police came a few minutes later. Now I wisely made sure that I did not have my 22 in my hand as I'm walking in the driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning. A lot of times, good Samaritans The cops come on the scene. They see a guy with a rifle. They take action. They don't know that I'm the brother. So I just left the weapon in the back porch. And that's something that I think somebody trained should automatically do. Is just let them know, oh, no, friendly. And a lot of times the Good Samaritan gets shot, and police have only a few minutes to a few seconds to react. And in many cases, let's say that I got to the front door with the 22 and I'm knocking on the door. And meanwhile, the police come and they say, you know, hey, who's that? And I turn around and I have my 22 facing them. A lot of times they'll, hey, we're going to shoot. And rather be safe than sorry. And that's unfortunate. So if you are in this situation, just make sure that you know this, that you just put your firearm down when the police show up. Unless, of course, it's an act of this actually shooting, engaging with the criminal. But never turn around with your weapon in your hand. Or put it down as soon as you can. Put your hands up. And cooperate. And the cops aren't there to shoot good people, but that's not why they didn't respond to the call, because a good person is trying to stop a crime. They did it because a bad person is committing a crime, but they can't always know within split seconds who you are. So anyway, that was the only time I actually had to use it. And of course, the potential criminal never, he ran off and never heard from him again. And but I think maybe he knew Debbie, my sister Debbie, may have said something, and I better scram. So guns are used to defend life and property thousands of times more than they're used to. In fact, some stats say up to 2 million times a year in the United States. So that's the goal of socialists, Marxists, communists, Nazis. They have a history of gun control. And then total control. And that's what it's really about. And we have to say that's what it's about. It's not about safety. If they were really interested in lowering the crime rates, they wouldn't be putting criminals back on the streets. We wouldn't have open borders. A lot of these people coming over the borders are criminals. Some of them are just trying to make a better life for themselves. I get that. If I lived in some Central American stinkhole, I probably would try to get here as well. But a lot of them are criminals. And they have a lot of, and they're coming not just over the border in Texas, but all over the United States. They're being shipped all over the United States. And I think there was a stat where a majority, if not a majority, a large percentage of criminals, convicted criminals in federal prisons are actually illegal aliens. In some cases, deported several times. They keep coming back, and then they eventually commit a capital crime. But they commit a lot of crimes and they're just deported and come right back and deported and come right back. Thankfully, some of that was stopped during the Trump administration. There was strict enforcement and there was pretty good morale. It's always good morale when you know that your bosses have your back. Try to be an immigration officer today. You know that your boss is against you. He hates you. He doesn't have your back. You see how they turned on those immigration officers on horseback when these Haitians were crossing, and they said, oh, they're whipping them. Well, they never whipped them. And anybody, you know, I'm not a horseman, but anybody that's a horseman knows exactly what was going on. There was no whipping, but that's what Biden said. Oh, we can't have that. It's unacceptable. So that causes more division. It causes more racial turmoil when you see, I think, mainly whites or Hispanics on horseback look like they were whipping Haitians. It never happened. They investigated. They got a clean bill of health, but were there any apologies? No, not one. The former press secretary, Jen, there, she never bothered apologizing. They just don't do it. Now, again, if this was a Trump administration that happened, oh, there would have been demands for impeachment and remove them immediately. No investigation. Just fire them on the spot. They have to be guilty because they're white supremacy, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway. So we need to push back when it comes to these gun grabbers, and they don't care. They know the facts. You know, if I know the statistics, they know the statistics. We need to point out they're not interested in curbing crime, stopping shootings. They're interested in controlling our nation, controlling the weapons, doing away with the Second Amendment. And the good thing about this is maybe some of these people who are pushing an Article 5 convention, they might just hold back a little bit saying, you know what? We know that they don't. They've told us how much they hate the Constitution. The left hates the Constitution and really hates the Second Amendment. And I have to say, these shootings are going to come more often. I hate to say it, and that's. And I'm not hoping. I'm hoping that this will stop. But I'm of the opinion that there'll be more shootings like this, and that will be used to justify more gun control. Now, switching gears just a little bit here on the culture war, June used to be my favorite month up here northeast of the United States. It's the prettiest month of the year. The temperatures are somewhat mild, warm, but not too hot like you get in July and August. Everything is in full bloom. It's just beautiful. Everything's greened up. I'm sitting on my kitchen looking over my deck and back porch, and it's just beautiful sight. But the Marxist, cultural Marxist, that's what I want to say, they decided to turn June into gay pride, in quotation mark, gay pride. And it's the reason why they take June is not to tick me off because it's my favorite month, although they have. There was a riot at a seedy mob-owned barroom. When you say mob-owned, you have to seedy is what most mob-owned barrooms are in Lower Manhattan and known as Stonewall. And they had lost their license because it was so it was just violating all of the codes. And it was frequented by homosexuals. And as I understand it, police were in pursuit of a homosexual prostitute. And they went into the bar and they were assaulted by a number of the patrons. And this happened for a couple of days. Now, the idea is that the police were always bashing homosexuals. That's what they did. And so this was the homosexual saying, enough's enough. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. And yeah, there may have been some cops that have abused their authority. That happens all the time. I don't believe that they woke up every morning just simply to bash homosexuals. But that's the narrative. And that's why they celebrate. That's what they celebrate. They celebrate a mob, a riot in a mob bar. And a few years later, there was a fellow from San Francisco that designed this rainbow flag. Of course, the rainbow is God's. Rainbow is a beautiful thing. When you see a rainbow after a storm, after a thunderstorm, I mean, it's beautiful. And I've even seen double rainbows. It's just a beautiful. And, you know, if you believe in the Bible, Old Testament, after the flood, God had a rainbow. It's a promise never to flood the nation, the world again. And so they took the rainbow to promote their lifestyle. That's their official life. That's what they do. And now they've got about 100 versions of that flag. They've got the progress flag. They put brown and white and black in there. I guess they consider Hispanics and blacks also lumped into the same thing, which is really an insult and outrage. And I know that we're all sinners saved by the grace of God, that the sin of homosexuality in God's eyes is a sin, like the sin of adultery, the sin of murder, stealing, and homosexuality in God's eyes is an abomination, but so isn't murder, so isn't lust, heterosexual lust and heterosexual rape. These are all abominations. I don't think it's in the best interest of society to elevate one sin over the other and to celebrate it. I think it's actually quite harmful. And this is how it progressed. And I remember I was a young teenager or even a child watching things like All in the Family. And it'd be a homosexual character and old Archie being a so-called homophobe. And that, by the way, I don't think that term homophobe was even coined by then. So Archie being an old school guy, just didn't accept the homosexual lifestyle. And the homosexual was a good-looking, athletic guy, not your stereotypical effeminate homosexual. And he would be quick with the lines, and Archie looked like an idiot. And the argument was, at that time, it was what two consenting adults do in the privacy of their own bedroom is, quite frankly, nobody's business. And while I may not agree what's going on in that bedroom, as long as I don't have to subsidize the results of that behavior, i.e., getting AIDS and then having to spend tax money to research so you can find cures or treatments for it, then I really have no say. And it's hard to argue that. As much as I may not appreciate what's going on there, I might think it's a sin. What they do is their own business. Okay, then, you know, then that was the initial argument, and people accepted it. Okay, yeah, most people being good natured, look, that's fine. You do what you want to do. No, who cares? Then the AIDS epidemic came, and I'll never forget. I was watching. It was a news clip somewhere. And it was on Fire Island, New York, New York City, little island, off of Long Island, not New York City. And this homosexual spokesman got up and he said that New York City is our Auschwitz and Ronald Reagan is our Hitler. I says, wait a minute now, wait just a minute. I said, Ronald Reagan isn't anyone's Hitler. He's not responsible for your behavior or the results of your behavior. You know, if I jumped off my back porch every day, I should expect to have a sprained ankle or maybe a few broken bones. I'm not going to blame it on the mayor of the town or the selectman of the town. I'm going to blame it on my crazy behavior. So if you're engaging in homosexual sex, which leads to certain illnesses, why blame Ronald Reagan or why consider the town you do it a death camp or a slave labor camp? That it makes no sense. But it's all this emotion. People get all emotional. It's not true. It's not reality. And I remember in 1988, my late former landlord, Warren Bradley, had a lot of respect for him. He was a policeman, a boxer, just looked up to this guy. He used to subscribe to Jerry Falwell's Moral Majority newspaper, which I think was a monthly publication, maybe been a weekly. And in that was published a poem by a man named Michael Swift, who was a poet from Connecticut. And it was called "We Will Sodomize Your Son." Oh, the Gay Manifesto. "We Will Sodomize Your Sons." That's what it started. It started like that, and it got worse. And I remember calling it said originally published in something called the Gay Community News of Boston, which is defunct. I remember calling them, and the gentleman answered the phone. I want to verify that your paper did indeed publish this. And he said, yes. He almost seemed to be a little remorseful. And I wasn't screaming and yelling at him. I was just matter-of-factly. I was a little firm, but I wasn't getting angry or anything. And I asked him, I said, now, if you're appealing to the general public and want to get support for you know, your what you do and your lifestyle, I said, do you think this wins you friends? Do you think this really helps? Or does it cause division? And he said, well, it was basically, I think he used the word outré, which meant somebody writes something when they're angry, but don't really mean it. Well, when you look at what they promoted in there, that agenda is being carried out. When you see sports teams, why does a sports team have to have a rainbow flag flying on its stadium? Or use the, in baseball, they use the on-deck circle, but they put the rainbow flag, and they put rainbow, they have souvenirs with rainbows. But why do you have to do that? Just play baseball. You know, your goal is to win games. Why do you have to, you don't put Christian crosses around Christmas time. You know, football, they're not even playing. NFL, they're not playing, but they have to put the rainbow. It's almost as if they have to. It's now required that every single sports team has to promote this lifestyle. I mean, are they catering to their fans or their fan base? I don't think their fan base is largely homosexual. And if it is, so what? Just, you know, if I'm homosexual, I like baseball. I just want to see a good game. And by the way, I do know I have homosexual friends that don't buy into this nonsense. They don't buy into this, this LGBTQ plus nonsense. It's the proper role of government is one is to protect its citizens, to protect their rights, and to promote, or if not promote, to promote a lifestyle that's best for the society at large, whether that be the local government, county government, state government, federal government. And you'll see, for example, the Massachusetts State Constitution, it talks about morality and piety and virtue of being essential ingredients for a free society. So why are so many governments at all levels, not all governments, but many of them, are aggressively promoting this lifestyle? Yes, we have citizens in any given town or city that are homosexuals. We also have some that are adulterers. We also have some that are thieves. Now you say, well, wait a minute. Are you equating adultery and stealing to the homosexual lifestyle? I said, well, if you're a Christian or Jewish person of faith, yes, definitely. It's the Bible's quite clear on that. And you know, something say, "Oh, the Bible, this and that." We're not. We're a secular society. All of our laws are based on morality. If you look at the Ten Commandments and you look at the legal code, there's laws against stealing. There's laws against murder. There may not be laws against lust, but there's definitely consequences coveting. You know, if I might covet something and then I go out and steal it, there's laws against that. So I can think. I may be jealous. I may covet something. Well, I don't personally, but some, you know, in general, people might covet things. But as long as they don't take any action to require that or deny that person, it's interesting too about coveting something. It's, you know, my neighbor has a beautiful wife and he's got a nice car. I want that wife. I want that car. Usually, when it comes to the envy, it's not so much. Jealousy was, oh, I wish I had a wife like that. I wish I had a car like that. I wish I had a house like that. But envy is, I'm not good enough to have what he has, but I'm going to do what I can to deny him. And that's the difference. But so there are laws that protect people's rights. There's laws that uphold morality. And there used to be laws against sodomy, especially public. And basically, the only time you could enforce something like that is when it's in public. You know, you didn't have people going into bedrooms. That's something we never want to see happen. So, and the Supreme Court struck down, and there was a Texas law. They struck down the state sodomy laws, which they had no authority to do, but they did. And then there were two men that were living in California. They were had what they call a same-sex marriage. It wasn't acknowledged at that time in Colorado. And they said, oh, we have to have acknowledged here. And they won the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in their favor. And the Obama administration, President Obama, before he became president, said marriage is between a man and a man and a woman. That's it. He completely changed 180, never apologized for his past views. He just, bingo, lights up the White House in the colors of the rainbow. And again, at all levels, you see this. The Empire State Building was lit up in the colors of the rainbow. I just heard just yesterday, Burger King has some kind of pride hamburger. Now, why can't I just go into, why does it have to be virtue signaling everywhere? Why can't I just, if I'm going into Burger King, why can't I just buy a hamburger? Whether I'm a homosexual, a heterosexual, or whatever I am, why can't I just buy a hamburger without having to be having some kind of lecture or trying to change my morals? So what once started out to be, let us do what we want, let live and let live, as long as we're not harming anybody. Now, if you dare oppose it, you're a phobe, you're a homophobe, you're a transphobe. They want to fire you from your job. They want to cancel you. They want to boycott you. And if you're a child in a public school or even some private schools, and they now are trying to convince you that you were assigned at birth to be a boy or a girl, but that's just an assignment. That was the doctor just looked at. Oh, okay, you have a penis. It must be a boy, a vagina. You must be a girl. But that's not reality. No, you are really a girl in a boy's body. And guess what we're going to do? Don't tell your parents, but we're going to get you. We'll transition you. We'll make sure you get the puberty blockers. So basically, we're going to give you dangerous drugs. They don't say the dangerous drugs. They don't say that. If you become transgender, you're more likely to commit suicide. And then about half of you decide to change your mind a few years later. And sometimes it's too late. You've already done too much mutilation to your body that it can't be repaired. So I have to say that we do need revival in this land. That's the revival. We need people to come to Christ. I know you can present facts to people until you're blue in the face or red in the face, and it's not going to make one difference to some. But we have to push back. We have to do it in a loving manner, not a hateful manner. But, you know, there's something called tough love. And that's what we have to say. If we're saying to our neighbors, our homosexual neighbors, that we're promoting their lifestyle, we're basically damning them, helping them to be damned. And that doesn't benefit them. Anyway, I want to thank you. We only got a few seconds left. Thank you for listening to Camp Constitution Radio. And until next week, may God richly bless you.